Hello, my angels. How is everyone today? Welcome back to another episode of Straight Up. I'm Kathleen and I'm here with Ellie, bestie and fellow journalist, as always. Okay, Al, before we start, I think we need to tell all the honeys about our Friday night out together.
Our wild night out that I think Bagatelle. Has fully made me understand that I am on the other side of 30.
The most wild, most raucous restaurant in London. If you like your dinner with a slide of thumping club music, which, hey, many of us do.
Yes, in the right
moment. I highly recommend. We've actually, full disclosure, been to Bagatelle before. So Bagatelle is a French restaurant. It's part of a small chain. They have them in other like bougie places in the world. There's one in, I think, St. Bart's. There's one in New York. There's one in Miami. And it's, as we say, a party restaurant. So lovely, like Mediterranean French food, pumping music, waiters that get up on the banquettes and dance. There's sparklers. It's kind of like having the club experience, but while you're sat down.
Yes, I think for anyone that doesn't like usual clubs, you would hate it. So it needs to be people who like genuinely want to eat and dance.
Nightclubs have to be your scene, I would say. But what I loved about Bagatelle, especially the first time I ever went there, was, wow, I can have the whole experience and sit on my bottom the whole time and go home at 1 a.m. So clubbing light.
Clubbing light. Although it is expensive. So I think special occasions only, guys.
Oh, totally. This is for a big blowout, gal's birthday. It's for like a ridiculously fun night. It would be quite good for a hen do.
Really good for a hen do. It would be very fun for a hen do. Though make sure that you get a table for a group, because if you get two people tables, you're kind of around the side, which is less fun. So get a big group table so that you're in the action.
Yeah, yeah. You want to be like in the thick of it. The waiters, as we say, are literally bonkers, and I mean that in the best way possible. One minute you look and they're wearing like what could only really be described as like a pharaoh's costume, having whipped off their shirts. Next minute they're up behind us and suddenly Celine Dion was playing. Our steak had just been put down, our very delicious steak and lovely little like aerated like popped potatoes.
Oh, they
like
were
the
great.
Chips weren't they so good. And next thing we know, the waiter that had put down our steak whipped the lamp off our table and was stood up next to Ellie. And I mean, were they like meant to be spotlights? So it was My Heart Will Go On, the Titanic soundtrack. Oh, we should say, by the way, we were very kindly invited by Bagatelle's lovely team to come check it out. I have reviewed it once before, about 5 years ago. I did a restaurant review. Let's just say Ellie came with me. We'd had a whole day out that day. And we were plied with shots, with Dom Perignon, which, hey, obviously we took. We drank it down. I was, by the end of the meal, could not stand up.
Cathers fell asleep at the table. I was genuinely fuming because I was having so much fun and we had to leave. I think we left at like 10:30 in the midst of the action.
How mortifying for me.
Yeah, so Cathers had to go and review it a second time.
Yeah, I literally had to go back a second time because I physically could not remember it. It's actually mortifying. That's so unprofessional of me.
It's
I feel like
so
I've never been able to even tell that story as a professional fail up until now.
Considering it is really a party restaurant, first and foremost, the food was pretty good.
Yeah, the food's like top drawer. It's posh.
Also, I would say dress up.
Oh, yeah. You must wear heels. You will feel like a little toad if you turn up in flats and jeans just to warn.
I was so happy to crack out my dress and mules.
I know, well, we learned that lesson from the last time, didn't we, when I think we were the most underdressed ladies in the place.
We were.
So this time we were like, right, I'm getting on my boob tube and my mules.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you did have a nice little new dress on
from Stradivarius. Yeah. £25.
I had my Barbie Skims dress on.
Oh yeah, good old Skims.
So that's our little recommendation. Now, on to the big celebrity talking point of today.
I want to discuss the Colleen Rooney British Vogue cover.
Oh, yes.
Seen it?
I have seen it, but not read it.
Oh, it's iconic. I cannot believe. So my friend texted me over the weekend. She saw it before me and she was like, never in all my years did I think that Colleen Rooney would be gracing the cover of Vogue.
Oh, my God.
And I've got to say, I agree with her.
I mean, I agree.
I never saw that coming. It's the September issue as well, which is obviously the biggest issue of the year.
Yes.
It's Edward Enfield's last issue before he steps down.
Yes.
I did see something quite funny and snide in Pop Bitch, which I must repeat here.
Oh, go on.
So the whole shoot was shot by Alec Maxwell, who just so happens to be Edward Enfield's husband. As Pop Bitch says, he took his final and last opportunity for a bit of Nepo bookage.
A little bit of Nepo bookage. You know, I spent a whole day with him.
Who? Alex Maxwell?
Yeah.
Alex Maxwell.
So I used Crossfilm, well, not me personally, but GQ used Crossfilms when I interviewed Naomi Campbell and Skepta.
Yes.
And that's where Alec, he was a very serious man.
I could imagine.
Yeah. Because there were some funny moments on that shoot and he didn't find them as funny as I did. I don't think anyone found them as funny as
I did. What was the funniest moment of the whole shebang?
Naomi Campbell leaving the room because she had a meltdown and then coming back in to reintroduce herself, despite the fact we'd all been there for an hour. Getting shouted at by her.
Oh my God, so she literally did a re-entrance.
Yes.
Let me try that one again.
Genuinely left the room and went, "Hi, I'm Naomi." And also I'd been told by the picture editor to stand up. It was literally like
she's like literally a royal.
And then the other funny thing was her and Skepta beefing over whether they should keep the dressing gowns they were wearing on for their shoot, because he was like promoting his new underwear brand or something, and because the Harvey Weinstein thing had just come out where he was like obviously doing like rapey casting couches in his dressing gown in his hotel room.
An unfortunate visual reference point.
Yeah, so they were in a hotel in their dressing gowns, and I was like, I mean, there's really not
and
much.
Who was saying we can't do this? Was it Naomi or Skepta?
Skepta.
Well, he was like, this is inappropriate.
Yeah, he was like, this is not a good look. And she was like, enough. Junior, shut up.
God. Oh yeah, with their like fake relationship at the time, allegedly fake.
Yeah, allegedly
clearly fake. Defo fake. Right.
Wait, who's her baby's dad?
No one knows. She hasn't said. I'm pretty sure she's had a second baby now, hasn't she? She's welcomed a second.
Do you know, also,
I thought maybe it was a surrogacy situation.
Also, as much as I think Naomi is obviously a massive icon in the fashion industry and what she's done for fashion is incredible, I have heard that she is not as championing of other young models as you might think.
Interesting. And but also doesn't surprise me, because I feel like she would be quite like a, it's my world and everyone lives in it and I want every job for myself.
Yes.
Wild speculation from me there, having never met her, but that's what I'm thinking.
No, that's it. But I, they were really frustrated that like she doesn't lift up young models.
God, Naomi.
You would think she does. I know, come on.
Right, back to Colleen, because I am literally obsessed.
Yes.
So can we talk about the cover line firstly? I literally cannot deal with how iconic this shoot is. So it's shot in Liverpool. She's in front of this like iconic Liverpudlian building. Obviously, for those that don't know, Colleen and Wayne Rooney are both Liverpudlians. And she's literally wearing like a trench, like a kind of like, she looks like an inspector. Like they've done that obviously purposefully, like literal Agatha Christie. Hilarious trench. And the headline is Wife, Mother, Detective, Superstar.
Ah.
Like, that is just actually brilliant. And the comments are so funny. Like, obviously, I've read the piece as well, which I'll get into. But there's a real divide, like, in the Vogue comments on the Instagram. So some people are like, this is great. Love Colleen. Like, here for this. And other people are like, oh, I want the Halcyon days of Alexandra Schulman to be back. What is this crap? Like, how the hell is she a Vogue cover? This is not real fashion journalism. And then other people are obviously like, this is so testament to how classist Britain is. People are hating on Colleen because she's from a working class background and they're expecting Vogue to be all the like poshos, essentially. So it's been very divisive.
I would love to know how that sells.
I would love to know how it sells. I mean, she looked amazing and I really like the piece. It's by Giles Hattersley. And it's obviously pegged to the fact that her three-part Disney documentary is coming out later this year. Also, she has an autobiography coming out, so lots of Colleen coming. So it opens with the description of their house. It's a £20 million mansion in Cheshire called Highlake Manor. That's a new build, but it's like done in Edwardian style. Yeah. If you look up the pics, it's just like, you know, it's, I think as Giles Hattersley says, it's kind of like what a child would draw of a millionaire's home. Like it very much is like this gorgeous, stately like manor. He said it's like super sumptuously decorated. Mm. She's the only one there because Wayne, I actually didn't realize this. I don't keep on top of football. So I don't know if the other Huns are feeling me too. But Wayne apparently is now head coach at DC United in Washington, DC. So he spends a lot of time in the States.
Oh my gosh.
And her four boys were at school. They're four boys. So she's kind of padding around this house.
Have
but
you ever
does
seen Wayne smile?
No, you say that. Yes, I have on the football pitch.
Oh, have you?
And they make fun of the meme, which I'd forgotten, where there was like this thing at the trial where he carried her black Fendi tote in on the first day for her. And everyone said that it was when the PE teacher has to do a bit of geography. She was like, we did have a good laugh about that one.
Because, yeah, I remember reading the coverage about him in the trial, about how he just absolutely refused to react to anything. And like didn't look at his wife or...
Yeah, I mean, she said it did take a toll on their relationship. Obviously, their previous issues have been well documented, i.e. strippers, prostitutes, I think. Wasn't there a grandma prostitute at one point?
There was a grandma prostitute.
I mean, I don't know whether we should go into all this now because it's going to take us off. I'm going to have to Google it. But yes, one of the major scandals that went down with Wayne Rooney was that he got baited for seeing a sex worker who was also a grandmother. I'm sure that was like one of the massive stories.
His granny romp, according to the Mirror.
So yeah, they are no strangers to tabloid drama, which is, I think, why Colleen was so sensitive about the whole thing and why she felt so vindicated when she did realise that it was Rebecca Vardy. Do people need a rundown of what actually happened with the Rebecca Vardy situation, or are we all well versed in the Agatha Christie law now?
Well, let's not be exclusive. In a nutshell, Kath, take it away.
Okay, Colleen Rooney had been concerned that someone was leaking stories about herself and Wayne and their family to the Sun. She and Wayne have never had a relationship with the Sun. As Liverpudlians, the shadow of the Hillsborough disaster and how the Sun reported on that was always an issue. They never had any kind of relationship with the paper. And yet, lo and behold, all these seemingly banal stories kept popping up. She did her own internet sleuthing. It was all via her private Instagram account, by the way, which is obviously only followed by family and friends. I will say, she and Rebecca Vardy didn't actually know each other that well. As Colleen said, I've never had a drink with her. Rebecca Vardy had invited her to various things. So she'd been invited to their wedding. She was invited to a baby shower. Colleen didn't go and was like, you know, I thought it was nice, but we just didn't know each other that well. Yeah. However, in hindsight, it seems, of course, that Rebecca Vardy was actually trying to get close to Colleen and wanted a bit of Colleen's star power to like rub off on her. There was a moment in one of the World Cups, I think it was in 2016, where, you know, the previous rule for the England, or the kind of done thing, is that the WAGs, so the England wives and girlfriends, don't sit together at the World Cups, because there was that one year where it became extremely distracting. It was posh Spice, you know who I mean, Victoria Beckham, my fave, Colleen, and a couple of the other WAGs basically stole all the headlines.
Yeah.
So since then, they are not allowed to sit together. There was a big photo op where Rebecca Vardy sat behind Colleen Rooney. So there was lots of photographs of them together. Now, in hindsight, people think that Rebecca Vardy obviously did that on purpose just to be like in photographs with her. Anyway, all of that is a very long-winded way to say that when Colleen realized that these banal stories were being leaked, she set a fake trail of stories, strategically blocking various people on her Instagram stories until she could see who the one person was that was viewing them. Her post about it was, "Over the past 5 months, I have posted a series of fake stories to see if they made their way onto the Sun newspaper. And you know what? They did. The story about gender selection in Mexico, the story about returning to TV, and then the latest story about my basement flooding in my new house," she wrote. And then the kicker. "I have saved and screenshotted all the original stories, which clearly show just one person has viewed them. It's..." And then there was like ...
Like, the most famous ellipsis of all time.
The most famous ellipsis of all time. "Rebecca Vardy's account." Obviously, this broke the internet. None of us usually see celebrities talk in this kind of way. Colleen makes it really clear in the piece that she didn't really plan, or she knew she was going to say something, but she didn't discuss it with anyone. She didn't get it legaled. So she freaked and felt very spooked when a few hours later, Rebecca Vardy was like, "I'm getting lawyers involved," because Colleen was just like, "Oh, I thought it was fine to just say something about someone online. Like, it's true and it's not nasty. So why can't I say it?"
Yeah.
Obviously then realised that she was about to be potentially dragged into a court case. Clearly the most stupid thing that Rebecca Vardy could have ever done, given that she lost and was made just to look like a liar.
Why do we think she thought she could win? Because wasn't there that ridiculous thing that like she threw her phone in the sea or something?
Her manager, Caroline Watts. The judge asked for their phones to look at messages that had been sent between Rebecca Vardy and her management. I think Rebecca Vardy kind of tried to insinuate it was people on her team that did it as well, not her herself. Oh, lo and behold, like Caroline Watts says that she dropped her phone in the Black Sea when she was on holiday with family. And Rebecca Vardy said that she'd like had some updates done that had wiped it and like couldn't hand it in. However, what was quite gross that I didn't know that I read about in this piece was that of the WhatsApp messages that were recovered between Vardy and Watt, they were just really, really gross. Like, they absolutely infuriated Colleen. They repeatedly called Colleen attention-seeking and even used the C word, but it's the exchange about Colleen's late sister, Rosie, who died from Rett syndrome in 2013.
What's that?
Just like a neurological disorder. She died just age 14. And Vardy and Watt were like going back and forth about that, like wondering whether Vardy mentioning Rosie to Colleen would be endearing and put her off the scent. Like, they were literally discussing her sister, her young teenage sister who tragically passed away. in this horrible, callous, like evil way.
Oh my God.
And that for Colleen was just the absolute icing on the cake. She said that she found so traumatic during the trial. She said it was just awful to sit there and listen to all those things.
I don't know anything about Colleen really. How did she become a wag? What was she doing before? Do you know?
Oh, nothing. She's like, she and Wayne got together at 16.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they met at 12.
So she's actually like a really authentic wag.
Yeah, yeah. She is like an OG. Like she's literally been their childhood sweetheart. She's been with him through the thick and the thin. As I say, there's been a lot, and she does kind of knowingly acknowledge it. And she said that her advice now that she gives to friends when they're having relationship difficulties is don't give up straight away. You'll get annoyed straight away, but I've always given myself time. So I think moral of the story is that whenever all of these various things have blown up, she's been able to sit back, have time to think about it. And some things have taken longer than others. But she said as well with her and Wayne, like there's always love there.
Yeah.
So there's always been something to work on. And, you know, they've got their four kids.
And a lot of money.
And do you know what? I think, I mean, I actually don't even think it would be that because she'd get loads of money if they got divorced. I don't think that would be the issue. I think it's more like she's been with that man her whole life. He's the only man she's ever been with. A lot of what he's done, we can even look at now as adults as like, yes, of course, it's not ideal to cheat on your wife with, you know, sex workers and have that all be regaled in the tabloids. But he got famous at a really young age and went through a really weird experience. And footballers do have like, I don't know, you know, there's this thing that people say, like footballers have this kind of like God complex because at 16, they're like plucked from obscurity, often from very working class backgrounds. And suddenly they're given like more money than they could ever spend. They're treated like heroes. Mm. You know, it's like a very weird psychological experience.
Yeah, and by the age of 30, you're suddenly like old mutton.
Yeah. And like, you're like loved and you're also reviled. And it's like a very intense experience, I think. So I'm sure she's probably given him a little bit of leeway.
Can I also interrupt at this moment to tell some very crucial information?
Go on.
The alleged grandma that Wayne slept with, guess how old she was?
Oh, she was like really young, wasn't she?
48.
Yep.
And she looks about 35. Like how, and what if, this is just so classic media. Oh, a granny romp. I mean, yeah, she's technically a grandma, but I mean, God.
Yeah, so what was...
I was imagining like some 85
But she was billed as a grandma, right? As in, not that the newspapers called her that, but as in, I think that was her like sex worker niche.
Oh,
I am
right.
A grandma. I could be totally wrong there. Let's check that. But I'm sure that's part of where that... And like that's part of why the story was even more salacious, because Wayne had like chosen the grandma.
Oh, right. Well, she was a mother of six dressed as a cowgirl, and she cost £45 per visit, which is very cheap, I would say.
Very.
Not from my personal experience.
Particularly well versed on the hourly rates, but £45 doesn't sound like a lot.
No, maybe that's why he chose. Yeah. Maybe it's just tight. Can I just say, and maybe this is really stupid, but do you think the most savvy of women nowadays at 12 might even know that their 12-year-old boyfriend was going to be a world famous footballer? Because you kind of would have an idea by 12.
No, because they weren't together at 12. They just met at 12 because they got
16,
together at 16.
You would have a good idea if your
he was doing really well. But again, I think they lived in a very like kind of sheltered, like small community in Liverpool that was completely just about football and Catholicism, essentially.
Are they both Catholics?
Yeah.
Are they?
I think so, yeah.
So what is your personal thoughts on Colleen? Do you like her?
Yeah, I mean, I was like, good for you, hun. Like, I am totally here for this. I thought the cover was quite great. As I say, an unusual choice, particularly for a September issue. But maybe it's not. Like, she was literally the most talked about woman in the country for like a good year. And what the piece does kind of touch on as well is how she's come out of this a real like likable public figure.
Mm.
Like everyone supports her and likes her.
Why do you think that is? Just because, and also I think because she did it with such humor, it became so funny.
And she's just so real. I think we were like, celebrities never like pull back the veneer like this. Usually everything's done through spokespeople and lawyers and all the rest of it. Whereas she just literally sat on her own. She didn't tell anyone she was going to do it, like her friends, her family, Wayne, because she thought they might stop her.
Yeah.
And she just was like, I'm sorry, but I've had enough of this. I'm sick and tired of living this life. As we've just said, you know, her whole marriage has been like marred by tabloid involvement. She's probably super sensitive. I think also it made her paranoid. She wasn't trusting people in her direct circle, like really actually good friends and stuff. I think we were all just, we'd just never ever seen a celebrity be that real. It was just so genuine. And also I think everyone was just damn impressed by her sleuthing.
Yeah.
Like it was a cold, hard, calculated months of work that she put into that.
It's actually quite inspiring.
Yeah, it is. Like, and she literally, like, as she says in that thing, she made up loads of fake stories. She pretended they were going to Mexico for gender selection. Like, great imagination.
Yeah.
And it was the final straw was the house being flooded, the basement in their house being flooded. Because as soon as that story went live on The Sun, the only person that had seen that Instagram story, because she'd strategically and methodically blocked everyone else. And yeah, the only person following by that point that she'd left was Rebecca Vardy.
What does she do with her life day to day?
Well, she's a full-time mum. Yeah. So she has been doing that, basically.
Caffeine is lost for words.
Yeah, I'm trying to put it nicely. Basically, in the piece, she says that she's been a full-time mum. They have four kids. The youngest is five. The two oldest are, like, really great at sports themselves. They're in, like, the Manchester United, yeah, like, younger team. They're all great at sports, obviously, as you would expect. She says that she stepped back to, you know, be a full-time mum. But now that the youngest one is out of reception, back at school, she said there's no way they're having any more kids. And she's ready to, like, focus on her again. So Giles Hattersley is like, read lots of fashion and beauty brand endorsements will probably be coming her way.
Yes.
She's obviously got the massive book coming. As we say, she's got the autobiography she's working on with Penguin. And this documentary, like the Disney documentary, is all narrated by her. Like, it's very much her documentary. And I think it delves into her childhood and how she and Wayne met. And it's kind of, she's very much at the center of it. So I think she's having this kind of like renaissance right now. I think that's partly what this cover is about. I think we're going to see like so much more from her. Got to say as well, she looks sensational in the pictures.
She does.
She just looks great. Like the clothes she's in, it was styled by like an old friend as well, like the co-owner of a fashion shop in Liverpool who she knows well. Like she keeps her circle very tight, as with so many of these celebs.
It must be so weird being with someone so famous from such a young age. Like your person, you must find it so hard to forge your own individualism in the public eye, at least, or even in social spheres, because let's face it, all your friends are going to be obsessed with the fact that you've got a footballer husband.
Yeah, they touch on that in the piece as well, that people have always said that she deals with fame better than Wayne.
Yeah.
Like he really doesn't like fame. She says he would so much rather just be a footballer and have none of it. She can handle it, but she'd still give or take it. And so she says, oh, when people say like, you're only famous because of Wayne, she's like, yeah, obviously. Like,
yeah,
well, I'm not actually, trying to be famous apart from him kind of thing.
Do you think she'd be a good laugh? Because maybe this is a bit judgy, but she seems like a very stern woman.
See, yeah, I think she would be a good laugh. I feel like that's what you kind of get from this whole
Agatha
Christie thing.
It's because she always looks so stern, but maybe it's because all I've seen are like the sleuthy pictures where obviously the shoot has to be like, I'm a detective.
Yeah, yeah, so she's doing like her best... Detective, her look. Best
Hercule Poirot.
Oh my God, I have to say as well. Oh my God, literally Poirot. There was some funny comments. One, I think Vogue, because I went back to look for this before talking about it on the pod, because I obviously wanted to be clear. So I think Vogue must have perhaps edited their caption or something, because one of the comments that my friend sent me that was so funny was like, because they'd been talking about the trial and someone had commented, I think the trial of the decade was possibly Roe versus Wade, guys, but still here for Kazza on the cover. So I think Vogue had called it the trial of the decade.
Oh,
and now it just says Agatha Christie trial.
That's actually jokes.
It's actually really funny. That
I'd say
it?
That is a big L from Vogue.
It is, isn't it? Just the way
also kind of classic Vogue.
I know, isn't it?
Oh no, we're just fashion.
Whoops, yeah. Oops. Also so funny, Hunsnet commented, hands down the best cover ever. Good old Hunsnet.
Yeah, so what do you think it will sell well?
Do you know, I think it'll go one way or the other.
I would not buy a magazine. If I'm going to buy a magazine, it's going to be The Economist.
Oh my God.
Or The New Yorker. Wait, is that true?
Oh, come on. That is not true.
Because it's actually...
Like you would buy The Economist.
Because it's actually got bloody content in
it. Okay, when's the last time you bought a copy of The Economist?
Well, I wouldn't buy magazines.
The New Yorker, yes. I can give you
I do
that.
Really like The Economist.
I've had a subscription to The New Yorker before.
So. I have, and then I didn't read any of them, and they all piled up on my bedside table. And I was like, I hate you and resent you, and you make me feel so stupid, because every time I look at the stack, I feel so unworthy.
Yeah.
And then I cancelled it.
Yes, sensible. I mean, they could just do with some more pictures.
Who has time to read 3 10,000-word features a month?
Yes, that is a lot.
On top of all, I mean, because we have to then read very... You know, we have to read it in the daily news.
You can cherry pick one from the website.
Yes, and also only one of them is interesting, let's be honest. If that. Anyway, no, I would genuinely love to know who buys glossy magazines.
Yeah.
Partly because you're just not getting your money's worth. There's nothing in them.
Full of ads.
Which is why I would rather buy The Economist, because I'm like, well, at least that is a good plane journey worth of content I can read.
One of my neighbours gets one of the guys that lives in the flats above me gets a subscription to The Week. Yes. And I've nicked that once or twice because his was piling up. So I was like, oh, maybe I'll try and like be clever and read this. And then I was just like, no, can't read this. Or was it The Spectator? I don't know. It was one of those like politically ones. And I was like, this is not for me.
I would buy New York Mag if it was.
Yes, if it was sold in this country. Sold,
yeah. Anyway, I don't even want to know that people wouldn't buy them because it makes me feel sad.
I know that. Industry. Yes, we probably shouldn't dwell on that too much. Guys, magazines are brilliant. Go out and buy as many as you can.
So do you think it is classist then, people saying she's not worthy of the cover?
Oh, it's so difficult, isn't it? Like, yeah, it is kind of, I think. Because they're saying she's not Vogue worthy. However, as I say, I had my own prejudices about that in that I was surprised to see that Colleen Rooney would be on the cover of Vogue. Not because I don't want her to be, just that I was surprised that they did it. But maybe I'm not surprised. Let me say with Edward, like, you know, with Maya Jama being on the cover last month, he's definitely doing the like gal next door cover star thing more than he is, you know, going for the kind of most lofty echelons of fashion. I did see someone comment as well, like, I'm really disappointed that you chose this to kind of look at old football, i.e. like a WAG and the wife of a male footballer, when literally this issue has coincided with the Women's World Cup and you could have done something with the Lionesses. That's and that true. Would have been a lot more powerful.
That's true, actually.
Which I thought was quite a good point.
And also would have been quite on brand for Vogue with their line of covers where they choose like cultural moments that really serve communities.
Yeah. However, I think to be fair to Vogue, I'm sure they've done quite a bit with the Lionesses. I mean, what did you make of the whole thing this weekend with like, you know, Rishi Sunak and Prince William, like just basically being so disparaging about it, not going. And then the whole Prince William thing where it's like, thank you for being women footballers because we have daughters.
Yes, that like, was so
patronising.
Idiotic. Yeah, I did not rate that. And Rishi putting on his brand new, most expensive football shirt with the tags on.
He's actually horrific. His I just can't even dwell on him.
Even looking at his stupid little leather bracelet that he has on annoyed me
so much. Does he wear a leather bracelet? Yeah, it's just that absolutely
classic,
tragic.
Like posh, wanky. Sorry if any of the male listeners have leather bracelets, but it's fucking annoying. Take it off. Take it off
I'm
right
gonna
now.
I'm going to wager a guess that most of our listeners are not wearing leather bracelets.
Do you know what I mean? It's like leather threaded.
You mean like one of those ones that like you would buy like on the beach when you're 13 on holiday?
No, it's like a posh one, you know? Like I'm sure one of like his wife gave it to him when he was like 30 or something.
Gosh, I don't even know.
It's like a posh, like woven.
I'm going to have to look this up.
Yeah, look up Rishi Sunak putting a football shirt on. However, it is not as bad as a man wearing a signet ring.
That's your thing that you hate, isn't it? You really hate that. See, I only literally know like two men that wear signet rings. So I don't, it's not a huge ick to me because it's not like a bait thing to me. And then you explained that in fact,
I saw a lot of them at Oxford.
Every man at Oxford was wearing one.
For anyone that doesn't know it, you have your family coat of arms on it.
Which is just annoying.
Because it means, well, I can understand the emotional value.
Depends where you're from, I guess. Because also you only have a, like, does everyone have a family coat of arms? Like,
no, I think you have to be linked to aristocracy. But then actually, is it different in Scotland?
Yeah, because I was going to say, because I think the Johnstons have a coat of arms, like as in it's just the Johnstons and any Johnstons in the whole country like can all have that. And we also have a tartan, Johnston tartan.
I'm surprised you didn't bring that up with Alistair Campbell, actually.
I know, did I not? Well, probably because he would have been like, what does it look like? And I'd be like, not entirely sure.
Annihilated by Alistair Campbell. Origin of signet rings, because now I'm saying this, I'm wondering, am I being really miseducated and are they actually like not posh at all? Interestingly, the signet ring was used as long as 3500 BC. The people of Mesopotamia used cylindrical seals as marks of authenticity.
Oh, right, found the picture. It is indeed a woven bracelet.
So can I also just say, I'm looking at an article from Tatler. A signet ring is a statement piece. It says lineage, bloodline, heritage, not just any pleb.
Right, so yes, I can totally see why that screams wanker to
it's
you.
It's a portable and intentionally visible reminder that there are ancestors here and they're important ones. Who wears one? Princes, but also penniless Sloanes.
Actually, so one of my besties has a signet ring that she got for a present a few years ago, but just with her initials.
Okay.
Which is quite nice.
Actually,
so it just kind of like is that shape of a ring and it goes on the little finger, but it's just like a two letters on it.
I think one of my friends has that and it looks very chic. I think it's more, it depends on what you're trying to say with your signet ring.
Totally.
Maybe we need to think about this a bit more.
Yeah.
What are the exceptions? When is it an insult? When is it not.
Any strong feelings, guys, on signet rings?
I've realised I'm developing very strong feelings about this.
I knew someone did. Back to celebrity gossip.
Let's discuss Scooter Braun.
Oh my God, Scooter Braun, the absolute pig.
Clearly.
So guys, Scooter Braun is the very, very famous music manager, best known for managing Justin Bieber. He kind of like discovered Justin Bieber on YouTube, built their career together, but he's managed quite a few big stars over the years.
Ariana Grande, he managed from 2013.
Yeah, from her debut album. And that's why he's been in the news most recently this week, because she has officially, Ariana, severed ties with him.
Yes, and Demi Lovato also parted ways.
Yep, last month. Him
and J Balvin.
Yep, in May.
So, and Justin Bieber is reportedly still under contract, but looking for new management.
Well, the thing is, Justin has come out and denied that he was planning to drop him. However, there are reports that Hailey is taking a far more active role in his career, and that the couple are generally like cleaning house. So Page Six reported on it, and they said that even they were given Hailey's rep as like an option for comment about this Scooter story even. So I don't think that Justin and Scooter are going to be over anytime soon, but something's going on. Something behind the scenes is going on. All his top clients are all leaving. Like J Balvin's now represented by Roc Nation. Also Ariana, her debut album, that 10th anniversary of it, it's called Yours Truly, is literally like this week, and she's meant to be like releasing this whole kind of deluxe new version of the album. Seems weird timing, doesn't it?
And she hasn't released an album in 3 years.
Yeah.
And she's pivoting to musicals.
And she's been doing just film, yeah.
So I spoke to the Telegraph music critic about this, because we were going to get him to do a piece. And he was like, it's not really a story. Like, people fall out with their clients all the time. If you look at all the managers in history, they're constantly losing clients and getting new ones. Like, don't underestimate how massive David Guetta is. And he's one of his clients. He has Quavo, he has like a lot of big, he has Kid Laroi, who's like one of the most successful musicians in the world. Like, he actually still does have a massive roster. He's worth a hell of a lot of money, and he's still incredibly powerful.
Yeah, so his business in 2021, he sold his company to the agency behind BTS, as in K-pop band BTS, for $1.5 billion.
So the reason why Scooter Braun has been such a big name in the last few years, for those of you that don't know or just need a recap, is that he basically went up against the Swifties. His company, Ithaca, bought Big Machine, which owned all of Taylor Swift's masters, and he did this without consulting her. So he suddenly owned all her life's work.
For her first six albums.
Yeah, and she didn't have a say in it. And so it was this huge online battle where she, very cannily, and I actually forgot she did this until I looked at it, I reminded myself today, she very much set her 85 million followers against him in a way that I didn't think celebrities would do. She said to her followers, please, can you let Scooter Braun know how you feel about this? Which is a very tacit way of saying, like, go after him.
So she had called him a manipulative bully.
Yeah.
Also, he sold her masters for 300 million to an investment company. So he didn't even just own them, he then sold them.
But I mean, also she's had the last laugh because her re-recordings have actually outperformed her originals. Yeah. But I was then having a little look at Scooter Braun. Little recap.
He must be a wrong'un. Sorry, but he just must be. That's how I feel about him. I'm very, very skeptical of music managers of like young teen stars. Of course, there are people that are in the industry because they genuinely love music and they want to nurture young talent and stuff. But there are also, as we've talked about literally 8,000 million times on the podcast, a hell of a lot of vultures. And Scooter Braun to me screams vulture.
So Scooter Braun, he's from New York City. He went to Emory College in Atlanta, where he started selling fake IDs and then planning these parties in college, which is how he got onto the music biz radar. He threw such good parties that people who were planning Eminem's tour got him to throw after parties for the Ludacris Eminem Anger Management tour in like five big cities. Then he started to do marketing for like big hip hop industry moguls. And then he discovered Bieber on YouTube when he was just 12, got in touch with the school, got his mum's phone number from the school, convinced him to fly from Canada to New York and meet him. And that's basically how he started his talent agency, SB. And then, as we say, got Ariana. But I was reading this insider piece called The Many Faces of Scooter Braun.
Ooh,
and it is so juicy. I really actually do recommend you guys go and
read it. He is meant to be literally a horrible man, isn't he? I feel like a lot of people have said that, like allegedly, whatever. And anecdotally, I've heard journalists say that he's generally not nice.
I think he's a very good businessman, and I think there's no denying that he knows exactly what he's doing, and he has been very, very good. He managed to rescue Bieber from reputational crisis. Do you remember when Bieber, like, there was a video of him saying the N-word? He was, like, beating up paparazzi and, like, just being, like...
There was some whole drama with, like, a pet monkey, wasn't there,
yeah,
at the time?
He was basically getting...
He was going a bit off the rails,
he was
to be
going
fair
off
to
the
him,
rails.
Justin, wasn't he?
And Scooter Braun managed to, like, rescue him from that. In what The Insider calls like a stunning reputational rescue operation. He was like cushy with all the main editors and journalists, had TMZ under his thumb. He was like, stopped TMZ from publishing the N-word video for ages. He was like so connected. But in this piece, it says, along the way, he's gone to great lengths to distinguish himself as a good guy, a family-orientated philanthropist with a strong moral code, known for steering artists out of rough patches. But many in the industry say that far from being an exception in a particularly ugly industry, Braun is one of its most ruthless players, a relentless egotist whose main focus is burnishing his image and growing his empire. The majority asked that their names not be used in the piece out of fear of retaliation, citing Braun's reputation for litigiousness. I've never seen anyone burn so many bridges with so many people, a person familiar with Braun's business dealings said. And a few examples of this, which really shocked me. So when Bieber was going through this really rough patch, one of the ways that Braun managed to rescue him reputationally was he had this like fool guy who was one of his own clients. He was called Little Twist, and he was a close friend of Bieber's, and he just bloody blamed everything on him. He was a massive scapegoat for all the superstars' misbehavior. So for instance, Little Twist said on a podcast recently that he was the one that took the fool for a marijuana possession charge that was actually Justin Bieber.
Oh, I remember that. It was on the PJ, on
yes.
the private jet, yeah.
And then Little Twist also said that he thinks, allegedly, Braun repeatedly planted negative stories about him to try and deflect attention from Bieber, including TMZ's story featuring photos of Bieber smoking weed in a hotel room.
But how did Little Twist take the blame for that?
So he said, so then another story was planted saying that everyone in Bieber's life were incredibly concerned that Twist has become a powerful negative influence.
Oh my God.
So he would like
insidious.
Place counter, yeah. And Little Twist is like, to be fair, he was doing his job incredibly well, but there was always a victim as a result of this.
So Little Twist is like, I was the victim and Scooter Braun ruined my career.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah. And then the piece also says that he is really, really strategic in placing himself as this kind of like mentor that helps vulnerable artists through mental health crises. But it's actually very exploitative. So for instance, he got really into like exec producing all these like documentaries about his clients' mental health struggles, like Demi Lovato's Dancing with the Devil. And then J Balvin also did one.
Yeah, he only got brought on to like manage Demi Lovato post her kind of massive public meltdown.
Yes, and apparently he...
It was like a crisis control management thing.
Yes, or was it a kind of, this is a vulnerable star I can take advantage of?
Yeah, and now he's got this whole narrative about how they were definitely going to say no to Demi Lovato, and they'd like planned exactly what they were going to say, and they were going to like turn down the deal and the option, and then he met her, and he was, his quote is like, I realised that she didn't need a manager, she needed a friend, enter me, kind of
yes.
thing. It's like, oh, sure, sure, and you just happen to like take your big, fat, juicy 10% as well.
And in these documentaries, he's like quite like a big supporting role in it as well. Like he very much like paints himself as like this great leader of these poor, vulnerable souls. And apparently as well, he was very much interested in Kanye only after he revealed himself to have bipolar disorder.
Oh.
That said, the Insider piece does also say that he basically steered him into having one of the most successful tours he's ever had in his career, The Life of Pablo. So he's clearly an amazing manager in the sense that he makes his clients a lot of money when they're good, but then when they're bad, he either dumps them or takes advantage of them.
God, I didn't even know he was Kanye's manager as well.
They had massive beef. They split a few years ago.
How can he possibly manage all these people? Sorry, but how can he physically have the time to do it? He must have so many sub-managers like working.
Yeah, he will.
Because you just, as a massive, sorry, I really would have thought that if you're literally a Justin Bieber or an Ariana or a Kanye, like you want one manager. Do you know what I mean? You want a manager that's just looking after you and no one else.
So that was actually, so I was really interested looking back at that. There in, I think 2016, Ariana split with him for only 7 months. And I was like, oh, they must have beefed. I wonder why that is. And apparently it was because actually before that, Scooter wasn't her sole manager. From 2013, for the first 4 years, it was, she had three managers and it was like, they all shared her. And then when she came back into the Scooter fold, it was with, on the condition that he would be her sole manager.
So, I'm sorry, when you're literally that level of global star, I think you can demand that the manager is your manager only.
I heard that Madison Beer had beef with him because he signed her when she was coming up. Madison Beer is this huge star in the US who hasn't really translated over here, but she's massive in the US. Mm. You interviewed her, didn't you?
Yeah.
And apparently within like a year of her getting signed to his management company, one of her exes like leaked some nudes of her. And so it was like threatening to overshadow her just as she was becoming a rising star. And apparently Scooter Braun was so put off by the negative press she was getting so soon into her career that he just like stopped putting any effort into her. And she very much like languished on a shelf. And I think this is a thing like a lot of his clients are saying, that he'll have his star clients, but then everyone else
gets treated terribly.
Yeah, or yeah. It's, but a lot of the people for the piece did say he genuinely has a Midas touch, and he's known as like the suit. If you want a Super Mario boost to your career, you'd go to Scooter.
Wow.
And how he does do amazing things in terms of the business.
I'm going to watch this with eager eyes to see if anything does come out as this kind of like domino effect of clients leaving.
I know.
Continues.
I'm really scared that there's something like he's done something bad.
I think he just probably is a shit. That's what I'm going to guess. But like, maybe you're right. Maybe a load of allegations are going to drop in about 6 months or something. Let's see.
I also feel like you can't be that successful without being ruthless. And can you be a nice person if you're ruthless?
But also, like I say, as that kind of manager, like you are ruthlessly making money off people that are much, much younger than you. You're mining their talent for your own financial gain. Like the whole thing is just bloody questionable. The way he operates and just exists, I think, is a bit like... there's an element that it feels a little bit, I don't want to say abusive, but what's the word?
Controlling, manipulative?
Certainly manipulative.
Yeah. I was having a debate with one of my colleagues about Ariana Grande because I was saying, well, you know, he actually did make her incredibly successful. And I think he was one of the masterminds behind the One Love concert, which is the big charity concert she did for the victims of the Manchester bombing. My colleague was saying that people forget how unpopular Ariana Grande was until... the One Love concert, that like actually she had the second lowest score after Bill Cosby on the Q scoreboard. Have you heard of that? I'd never heard of it.
No.
It's like an aggregator that basically like creates a popularity score for like performers and famous people. And because, yeah, do you remember she like licked all those donuts in that store?
No.
Do you remember? She went viral for her and this boyfriend that she was with licking donuts for sale on like in this like shop and then laughing about it. And it got caught on camera, went viral, and she had to apologize and be like, I'm so disgusted with myself.
God, no, I don't remember that.
And I think she had a few beefs.
Donut gate.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I feel like she's young and just being
stupid.
Silly. Yeah. But I don't think she was like the most liked pop star.
I mean, I definitely was completely indifferent to her until her response to all the Manchester bombing stuff. And then I was like, oh my God, you're actually amazing and iconic. And I feel really bad for you.
Yeah, and that Vogue, in fact, Giles Hattersley's Vogue profile with her was very good.
Yeah, that was like the first interview I ever read with her, I think.
Yeah, I don't know why people didn't like her. I think she...
I thought of her as a tween star before that, I think. I just was like, it's very like former Disney Channel-esque, and so I just wasn't engaged.
Talking of other grubby celebrity things, how do you feel about Amy Winehouse's parents publishing her private diaries?
Are they? Oh, I don't know. That is such a tricky one. I'm really not sure. In a way, I think it's like a huge like break of trust. But in another, they might be quite insightful. And I was actually thinking that weirdly, watching, what's it called again? The recent Disney series about Anne Frank, but told from the opinion of one of the people that helped the family.
Oh, I don't know.
You know, it was like a Little Light or something. It was out recently and it was like literally one of the most talked about series.
Oh my God, that just went over my head.
No, it definitely wouldn't have. You would have covered it at work quite a bit. It has the girl from Everything I Know About Love in it that plays...
Belle Powley,
isn't
yes.
it?
Yes, this is coming to me now.
Well, anyway, I was thinking about the Anne Frank stuff a little bit around then and I was like, obviously in one way, like, you know, she would be maybe mortified that like... the whole world literally knows like her innermost thoughts. But in another, then there'd be the flip side where, and I think the Belle Powley character talks about this, Anne would have been like thrilled to think that her words would have had like such an impact. And I think it's just very individual, isn't it? I mean...
Yeah, no, you're right, actually. But I think the Anne Frank thing was so important to understanding such a massive, massive historical moment. Whereas I don't know how much Amy Winehouse's diaries...
have like broader social, historical, cultural relevance.
Because they are very whimsical. I mean, obviously they've only decided to publish certain bits. It's like little, I mean, I didn't know this, but apparently she really wanted to be a journalist. How cute.
Yeah, I think if they've only published excerpts, then that's completely fine. I thought you meant like publish the whole thing in its entirety with warts and all secrets.
Well, there's some stuff that I would personally be absolutely fuming if my parents published, like lists of like who she wants to have sex with and who she wants to kiss and like personal improvement lists, like things that are very, and like flaws about herself and who she wants to be like. And, you know, things that I would find incredibly embarrassing and revealing.
And personal.
And very personal, yeah. But there were a few interesting nuggets that I was like, oh, this is amazing. Was that, because her parents have basically co-published it. They've worked together, separated, but they've published it together. And they've said that she wrote everything down because she wanted to be a journalist and she was so obsessed with like observational writing. And her parents said that during arguments, particularly with Mitch, who she'd have massive rows with, she would be like, stop there, I just need to write this down, and stop Mitch mid-argument, write down what he'd just said, and then like close the notebook and start shouting at him again. Jokes. And that was the origins to rehab. They had a massive row about like, daddy wants me to go to rehab. Mm. And then she like stopped the argument, wrote down.
I guess her notebooks play large in the documentary about her, don't they? There's lots of her handwriting and little scribbles.
Yeah.
So it's quite obvious that she was a journaler.
Yes. I do think it's highly ironic, though, like one of the parents' quotes right at the end in this Telegraph piece where they're both interviewed is, celebrity robbed Amy of any privacy she might have wished for. Then it's like, right, okay.
And that's a bit of an irony. Yeah, and so you're publishing her private diaries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this also plays into the fact that Mitch in particular is a controversial figure because Asif Kapadia's documentary, Amy, very much paints him as a bad guy who like brought the cameras to Jamaica when Amy was like recovering from her worst.
Yeah, and people thought that he like loved the kind of fame and notoriety and the money and all the rest of it.
Yeah, and he would duet with her and he like released his jazz album after she became famous. I mean, I think he released an album like 2 years ago.
But then on the flip side, people were hating on the mom as well, weren't they? When she released that documentary the last couple of years, Understanding Amy, was that called?
Oh, yeah.
Which was all from her perspective. I don't know, to me it feels a little bit like both parents are making it a bit too much about them.
Yes, I can't imagine my parents doing that.
It's really difficult.
Not to be like my parents better than Amy's parents, not at all, but I just mean I can't imagine them, that being something that most people, most normal families I know would want to do once
you would think that you would protect your child's privacy,
yeah,
rather than expose them in death. Like, it does seem, but you know, maybe they would think that it's part of her legacy.
That's true. She was a very beloved, massive musical icon.
And if they think that it furthers in some way her, like, her role as a kind of timeless artistic icon, then hey.
And also I can totally imagine parents just desperately want to keep their daughter alive in any way they can, and they don't want people to move on and forget about her. And this was in line with her 40th, what would have been her 40th birthday. So I can imagine
that.
Wow,
40th. I know that makes me so old.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I can imagine that they're just like, just so want her to continue to be part of the public conversation in a way. But yeah, I felt very torn about it. And it made me think, thank God I stopped writing a diary like 10 years ago.
Yeah. I never could keep up with writing a diary. That's why I always wonder now. I'm like, am I a true writer by heart? Because I couldn't be bothered when I was younger. Like, I'd have a diary and I'd write in it for a bit and then I'd give up. I'd do it for like a few days and then put it under my bed. And then, yeah, it was always like a novelty. Like, I never actually did it religiously every day. I just couldn't keep up with it.
I find now, I used to write pages and pages in my diary when I was younger. Now I try to free write. You know how therapists and stuff tell you to free write? And I tried to do that the other day. At first, it was like the most embarrassing thing I've ever committed to page. But secondly, like, I can't write for a very long time. My wrist hurts.
Yeah, because like, oh, we're just used to typing now.
Yeah, it was like genuinely really painful after, I don't know, like 1 minute.
God, wow.
Also, if anyone does free writing, can you please tell me how you do it? Because I generally, maybe when I get drunk on this podcast, I'll read out what I wrote because it is so funny.
That would be great.
Should I tell you what it was?
Go on, then.
It was me imagining what the, you know, that woman that killed loads of her family by like, with the mushroom soup.
Yes.
I was like, let me just write from her perspective.
And it's like, didn't she do it on purpose?
Obviously, she must have done it on purpose. How'd you? And also because she didn't die and neither did the children.
Convenient.
Like, yeah. But I just wrote like one page from her perspective, making the mushroom soup.
I mean, of course you would choose like a hilariously unhinged perspective like that.
And her addressing, her setting the table and addressing the family member she was about to kill before they'd sat down, like just preparing what she was going
to
say to them.
Okay, that could either be really fun or really dark. And I would like to know either way. You can read it to me as perhaps a weekend treat.
Well, the most depressing thing about it was incredibly dull.
Oh,
how did I manage to make something so unhinged and dark, boring? But I did.
Well, to be fair, I don't think that's the kind of free writing they're talking about in therapy.
What
either. I think you're conflating the two. When they're talking about...
Right.
I think in therapy, they're talking about like journaling your innermost feelings, not like a fictional take on a recent story that you're hoping could be turned into a novel.
Actually, now you say that.
Yeah, I think maybe you're getting the two a little...
Like, Eleanor, you have conflated. You have some problems accessing your inner thoughts. Yes.
Yeah.
Let me just write from the perspective of a murdering middle-aged woman.
Okay, we need to discuss literally the juiciest celebrity topic of the week.
Oh my God,
poor old Britney's divorce.
Oh my God.
What's your thoughts? Sam Asghari, is he a scumbag? Is he not? He's the one that's filed for divorce. So he filed for divorce last week after 14 months of marriage. They've been together for like 6 to 7 years. There's going to be a bitter divorce battle. Brit is refusing to let Sam claim custody of their two dogs. The most important part. No, but obviously it's all very spurious claims.
Did she cheat on him?
That's what's being alleged, that he found that she cheated on him with a like member of staff in their house, and that perhaps it was viewed via like CCTV. Video, CCTV or whatever. And also perhaps that she asked this same person or another member of staff to video her naked. And he was super mad about that.
Well, I can believe that. She's always getting...
I could believe that she would ask someone that naked. Works there to shoot her naked Instagrams. I mean, I love Britney. I absolutely love her. And she's been through so much. But following her on Instagram, there is a level where I'm like, I'm obviously goes without saying, thrilled and a huge supporter of her independence. Obviously, the conservatorship was really, really wrong. But she does seem, let's say, fragile.
Yes.
In much of her content.
It is becoming very kind of, you watch through gritted teeth and shielded eyes. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's, you're like, oh God, please stop being so cringe. She's kind of gone the Madonna way of just, I think, embarrassing herself on Instagram. And it's really difficult to say that, because then you sound like you're shaming women for
being like...
Or
you're like pro the...
Yeah.
The conservatorship or something. Or like, yeah, women shouldn't be allowed to be naked in their... social media, which obviously they absolutely should if they want to, but Britney stuff does feel a little bit unhinged.
Yeah, well, there's just so too many reports and stories of behavior that doesn't suggest she is happy.
It's also like the seriousness of a lot of the videos as well, and just the constant content. I mean, I do find it really interesting when she talks about her experiences, and of course she's like psychologically damaged from everything that she's been through over the past decade plus. But to be honest, I was always thinking, even with Sam Asghari, so she's 41, he's 29, like, what were his motives? I'm skeptical of him. Like, I feel like she's a vulnerable person. He is understood to have signed an ironclad prenup before their wedding. But he filed for divorce from her. He cited irreconcilable differences. And in the filing, he's requested that Britney be made to pay spousal support and cover his legal fees and court costs, while also asking for separate assets and various items. That sounds like he's trying to take her to the cleaners.
Yeah. And also, why did they get married so quickly?
Like, literally, they got married 14 months ago. I mean, and how great is this? Apparently, the only thing that she doesn't want back, she's like, you can keep it, is the ring, because the engagement ring he got free from the jewelers.
Why? Because he said this is for Britney.
I think so, yeah. What? Which even that, I'm like...
So he was like, hashtag gift me at the jewelers.
I think so, yeah. Basically, to be that, like, oh, it's going to get loads of press because it's being given to Britney. So I think now, allegedly, she's despicable. Giving the ring back.
I saw a video of a man kissing up her leg.
Ooh, really? I did see those videos of her like out with her friends having fun. I couldn't tell if that was like her group of like gay friends. I mean, not that... the kissing on the leg is relevant either way. But when she was like, I've gone out on a night out with all my besties, and she's wearing that green dress and it's like a gang of men.
Ah, right.
That's what I got from that.
Okay, fine.
Rather than it be. But I don't know. Again, that is total speculation from me.
Did you see the video where she was having her vag sniffed by a dog?
No.
Yeah.
But that does also go into the, she does seem slightly vulnerable and fragile pile.
It was really, really upsetting.
She posted it on her Instagram.
Yes.
Right.
And it's like a dog. It looks like a dog is like going down on her. It's genuinely vile. Should not be online.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really, and I'm very scared about her memoir because.
Sold it to Simon & Schuster for 15 million.
Oh my gosh.
So that's like upped her net worth recently as well. There's a few things. And obviously, she's had those two songs. There has been movement where people think now that she might have a little bit more money. However, it does seem that he will miss out on the multi-million dollar support request, as a huge loophole existed in their prenuptial agreement, which allegedly contained a section that Sam would get $1 million spousal support for every 2 years that they were married. So they haven't actually been married for 2 years.
Oh, well, that's good.
So that means that people think that he won't get that. However, people think that TMZ sources say he could receive like a one-off check from Britney to prevent him from sharing any embarrassing information about her or their marriage. It definitely seems possible that he would threaten that, doesn't it?
Apparently, I saw in the wake of the memoir news a couple months ago that some A-listers have been crawling out of the woodwork in an anxious spiral about what's going to be published about them.
In Britney's book?
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah.
Apparently, people are getting very
fretful. Do we know any names?
We don't.
Oh my God, I'm quite excited to see what comes of that.
I mean, I'm very excited, but I'm just really scared it's just going to be terribly written and really embarrassing.
I mean, surely she'll have a ghostwriter. Surely. She's not going to be doing this on her own. I would be shocked. I don't think she'll be writing a word of it, quite frankly. Do you?
Who? Yeah.
There'll be a ghostwriter. They'll do interviews and then do it that way. Surely.
If you were hired to be Britney's ghostwriter, would you actually do it? Because wouldn't you feel possibly part of the exploitation trade?
Oh God, that's a really difficult one. I just don't know.
Yeah. I suddenly thought,
is she paying you? Is the publisher paying you? Like, she does what, I mean, and also, like, I guess if Britney's getting 15 million out of it, she's probably pretty happy about that.
Yeah, and I guess to be fair, in a way, you'd almost want someone who isn't too journalistic about it.
Because, and she's taking back her story for the first time. Like, I think she's pretty like gassed about it, is she not? That it's going to be her opportunity to tell her own story in her own words.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the ghostwriter for Prince Harry saying, you know, there's loads of stuff that he was encouraging Prince Harry to take out. And Prince Harry was like, no, it's got to be in there. Like the drug stuff, I think.
Oh, interesting.
It is my dream for any publisher people listening to this to do a ghostwriter.
To ghostwrite a celeb memoir. It would be fun, actually.
Because
it'd
be
really
so fun. It's our favourite thing.
And then you get to like write it up.
Yes. And it's not even your own life, so you can do whatever you want.
No, that would be actually really fun.
Who would be your dream job person?
Oh my God, I don't even know.
Hang on, let me guess for you. Oh, well, you would love to do Kim Kardashian, surely.
Do you know, I would, but I think I would like to do a British person because I think I would like to weave it into like the socio-historical context. Depends who it is. I mean, certainly wouldn't say no to a Victoria Beckham. Even though I did read, as I'm sure I've also said on air before, I was an avid reader of her original autobiography, which I believe came out in like literally like 2002 or something, Flying Without Wings.
Flying Without Wings.
I think that's what it was called. Was it called that? I could be Learning to Fly, maybe.
Do you think she'd be a bit of a dry autobiography though? Or do you think she'd
be quite true, actually, not that much exciting stuff's happened to her in like the grand scheme of things, if you know what I mean.
I think I'd quite like to do Harry Styles's.
Oh, yeah. Surely he'll have one coming out soon, actually. Or maybe he will never do one because maybe he wants it to be, you know, he's such a private person.
Yeah.
Oh, it was called Learning to Fly. I'm not completely mad. You know, on the divorce front with Britney as well, she's using, speaking of Kim Kardashian, Lauren Wasser, who was Kim's divorce attorney when she was splitting up with Kanye. She was also Angelina Jolie's during her divorce from Brad Pitt. Johnny Depp's during his divorce from Amber Heard. She also did Britney the first time around with Kevin Federline.
Oh, nice. So she's always on the winning side.
I think so. I listened to her podcast once when she had Kim on it. It was quite fun.
Gosh. Okay. Well, this is coming out quite soon, actually. October it's coming out, Britney's memoir. I saw someone post something a bit misogynistic, but then I was like, does he have a point? But maybe that's toxic of me. Because, you know, the cover is her like naked.
Yeah.
And he's like, great way of proving that you're like comfortable as a woman in your own skin, or you're like a woman now, or whatever.
I mean, I think rather than it having any particular reflection on womanhood now, it's more for me that I'm just like, Britney's really got a thing about getting naked at the moment.
She does have a thing. Yeah. I think it must be a empowerment thing because she's
it must
been
be
so
like
repressed.
Taking back her own image and body and everything. Yeah.
And also, you know, she was always a dancer. Like, it's not like she's just strutting around naked pointlessly. She's dancing.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, no, she's also taken pictures of her just being naked on her bed. I mean, I don't know. I don't know anymore. I don't know what's acceptable to say about other women. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. Like, It's
a quandary.
Yeah. As in, I literally want every woman to be able to do exactly what she wants and when she wants. And if that's posting loads of naked pictures, then more power to you. But there's something about it with Britney that I find like a little bit tragic. Like it, like you say, even if it is coming from a place of empowerment, it's like, but is that empowerment in a trauma response? And like, yeah, you know, the whole thing just feels like a little bit like sad to me.
And there's so much we don't know that it just feels really difficult to make up your mind. And also, and again, maybe I shouldn't say this, but I do think if you've got children, then you can't just do what you want.
Like, that's what her kids were pissed off about, wasn't it? They said in that big interview, weirdly, with ITV, even though it's like Britney and the Federal Lines, the kids were like, we're not speaking to her. They were embarrassed, I think, sorry. No, they didn't say in that specifically that, but they definitely were like super mortified by her posting naked pics on Instagram.
I think that's fair enough.
Teenage sons, you probably would be.
Yeah, and you've got to understand that it's already hard enough, you being Britney's sons, in terms of the how you navigate your social circles and the attention you get and whether you can trust people. And then to add that to it, it's a lot to put on your son's shoulders.
It is.
It's the same with Madonna's children. I mean, they were also mortified, weren't they? I don't know. Can you imagine seeing your mum's tits on Instagram?
I mean, yeah.
Relentlessly.
I used to always think that about Lisa Rinna from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, like, who has the two daughters, Amelia Gray. And I can't even remember what the other one's called now. But they are, I mean, they are models themselves. But I'm just like, God, their mum is like constantly trying to post all these like thirst traps. She'd be like, can you just stop? But everyone's embarrassed of their parents. I suppose there is that.
That's the thing, everyone's embarrassed of their parents. And actually it's a societal problem because, you know, it's not the mum's fault.
I mean, I'd be embarrassed if my mum was like an Instagrammer full stop. If my mum was like active on Instagram and had like a proper following, I'd find that embarrassing probably. I mean, maybe I wouldn't. Maybe I'd find it really cool and major. I don't know. Guys, let us know. Would you mind? Would you allow one of your parents to be an influencer?
Thing is, and I think this is what it boils down to at the end of the day. Yes, I think the correct response is to be like, everyone can do what they want and we shouldn't judge and she could post whatever she likes. But the reality is it's still embarrassing. So
yes,
I think both things can be true.
And as a teenage son, you will always be embarrassed.
Yes.
By your mother being naked.
And there's no two ways about it. You are making your son's life harder. Whether that's something you need to actually address.
That's her responsibility to like protect their fragile masculine egos or not. The jury is out on.
My God. I mean, I found it embarrassing. My mum even coming to teach at my school.
That is quite embarrassing, to be fair to you. I feel like you had that twice in your life, didn't you? Your dad was the head teacher of the boys' school, local boys' school, and then your mum was the teacher at your school.
Yes, my most
definitely got potential for
embarrassing moments actually was when my dad dropped me off at my school, and for some very strange reason, the school was like doing like a Dorothy, and they got a yellow brick road that went from the driveway of the school all the way down to the front like gates of the school painted yellow, and the head teacher knew my dad because they were obviously like both head teachers in the same town, and in front of everyone, all my friends that were coming to school that morning and all the parents took my dad by the arm and skipped with him all the way down the yellow brick road, which was fucking long as well.
Oh my God.
Leaving me at the top of the driveway.
Yes, that is embarrassing. I'll give you that. That is mortifying.
More embarrassing though for my poor sister who had to go to school and with my dad as her headmaster, and her boyfriend was at the school.
Oh.
Yeah. And he once climbed up a drain pipe to her bedroom. He scaled our house in the middle of the night.
Your sister's boyfriend?
Yes. And guess who was...
Sorry, Annabelle, for just revealing all your secrets.
Who was at the window with open arms?
Your dad?
My dad. I can't say it was open arms. It was a very, very angry
very furious
dad.
Face.
Yeah. But worse was that I was in the bedroom below. Oh God, this is such a long story. It's quite a funny story, but I don't know if I have the heart to tell it now. Should I not?
Oh, go on.
Okay. Basically what happened was it was my sister's birthday party and the boyfriend wasn't allowed to stay over. So me, my parents dropped him home down the road after the party. Goodbye. Next thing I know, I'm asleep in my bed. It's probably like 2 a.m. and there's thumping at my window. And because of the angle of my bed, I can see just between the gap in the curtains and the window, I can see like the pain. And I see two massive hairy legs, bare legs, because the man was wearing a tutu. I couldn't see the tutu. All I see is like naked male legs.
and hanging down.
And it looks like he's trying to get into my window. So obviously the first thing you think as a young woman in bed with a man at your window is you're about to get assaulted. So I scream, I'm like, Dad, wake up my parents. And my dad gets out this like staff that he had under his bed from the moors. And we hear the drain pipe clanging up the house. The man clearly climbing up it past my window to go up to my sister's bedroom.
I mean, you
say
man, are we talking like 15-year-old boy here?
He would have been 18.
Okay, that's all right.
And yeah, so he is still in his party outfit, pink tutu, bare chest. It is snowing, by the way. And he has the audacity to climb his headmaster's house, the one he has to then face at school the next day. Or like Monday, I think it must have been a Friday night. So yeah, my dad pulls him into the window and he's like, I can't even talk to you right now. We'll talk in the morning.
So did he stay the night in the end?
That was the first time staying the night. Yeah. So I guess it worked.
Yeah. Oh, that is a... I wouldn't want to have been him in the morning.
They're not together anymore.
Yeah. All because of that.
Young love, eh? Such a modern Romeo and Juliet moment.
Oh, apart from the bit where you thought you were about to be assaulted, as you say.
I know, my sister must have been like, what a little fucking neek, like running into
telling
dad.
Telling on me.
Being like, Dad, man. I think it's fair enough, though. I mean...
No, I do. Absolutely. I mean, I would have literally been like having a complete meltdown.
We had just dropped him home. I saw him in the car.
I didn't think he'd be back. Oh,
I don't know how we got onto that. What's that got to do with Britney Spears?
Well, I can smell an extremely delicious smell coming from your kitchen. And since yesterday, I just had to survive on a diet of water, having food poisoning that was coming out of both ends. And that's all I'll say on it.
Both orifices.
After a dodgy prawn.
Oh, God.
I think.
I don't eat prawns.
I think. Yeah. No wonder you don't like them. That's the well and truly scrap them off the list for any sharing meals we have coming up.
Yeah, yeah.
I am starving.
What are you going to have?
I don't know, but... Oh, no, I do know. Marlon's making some kind of like pasta dish he showed me earlier.
Gorge. What is
some healthy Jamie
steak,
thing.
I think.
Steak. Oh.
Steak.
I think we better go and get to it.
We better go, guys. We'll be back next week. Sorry, no celebrities around over summer. They're on holes.
Yep. Hence the no guests. We'll be back. Just the two of us.
Just the two of us. Is that a song?
We can make it if we try. Just the two of us.
I don't know if we're singing the
same song.
Do you
know any more words? Oh, maybe we're not. What were you singing?
I don't know. I just sounded like a
tune. Surely it must have been just the two of us.
I'm channeling Frank Sinatra. I feel like you're channeling Justin Bieber.
No, Justin Bieber, isn't it Marvin Gaye or someone?
I don't know. I feel unhinged.
It's like the most iconic wedding song.
It's 9:20, so if we sound more and more
unhinged, just because we are.
Unhinged.
Right, let's leave it at that. Goodbye.
Bye.